And so, welcome. This is our series on treasure stories from around the world. And then we end each session by looking at one of the parables of Jesus that have a treasure motif or a treasure idea connected with it, and try to think through what are some of the similarities and differences in the treasure stories or treasure parables which Jesus tells us as distinct from some of the other treasure stories from around the world. I guess to introduce myself very briefly, I'm Michael Pellett, and I teach at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Say that fast three times, and if you can, you can be a radio announcer. And I'm also a pastor at a shared ministry, which is a shared ministry with a Lutheran congregation and Presbyterian congregation. Quick overview of what we've done. We've looked at treasure stories and started out with a little piece, a poem by Emily Dickinson that brings up the question whether there really is treasure or not. You can think about that sometime. That's just there for a brain teaser. Secondly, as we look at treasure stories, and we're going to be interpreting them, trying to figure out what they're trying to tell us, I think the three most important things to pay attention to are the plot, right, the movement of the story, the action, and the plot is comprised of five, maybe six features. In our treasure story, there's hiding the treasure, then someone is seeking it, finding it, obtaining, securing, and possibly using. And so in our five sessions here, I've been concentrating on stories that highlight each one of these features. So the first session was hiding, yesterday was seeking, today we are going to find, or not find, whatever. Certainly those who are on staff and have to leave at 6:45, you will not find. That's just how it goes, sorry, but no. The second thing is to pay attention to the actors in the story, the characters in the story. Who's in it and what are they doing? And so we try to pay attention to that. And also, what are the items in the background of the action? Right? Sometimes there will be animals. Sometimes there will be items, like yesterday we talked about divining rods and hen's blood and hog dung. So you have to pay attention to all that and figure out what's going on there. And so if we pay attention to plot, actors, and items in the story, we have a chance of trying to figure out what it might mean. As well, when we come to this story, again in the plot, as we move from hiding to seeking to finding to obtaining, there's again in each one of these interactions between there, what can be going on is some kind of contest or competition. Think about the children's game, hide and seek, right? Everybody hides. The one person has to seek, that's a contest or a competition, right? Can I, in my seeking, find in that? Or sometimes the seeking is there, it is certain, it is just luck, accident, chance. Sometimes providence, fate or destiny. Sometimes there are superstitions that go with it, and there might be a paradox. Yesterday, as we looked at seeking, we found out that most of the treasure stories the world over seem to tell us that there really is no surefire technique for seeking that guarantees treasure. That beyond everything else, if you happen to get the treasure, it's not because you're a good seeker, it's just you're lucky. or there's providence. Maybe an analogy is if you win the lottery. There's no great skill involved, I don't think, in winning the lottery. You say, if I win the lottery, it's luck, it's providence. And that was much of what was going on in our seeking stories. We'll find today, and also again in Jesus' parables, there is often a paradox between hiding and seeking, or in today's parable, seeking and finding. In other words, there can be seeking without finding, or finding without seeking. And that can be a bit frustrating and confusing, but there are also things that we can learn from that. And so that's where we have been. And so today we're going to concentrate on some parables and some treasure stories about finding. And the first one, which I would like to read for you, and again, most of these are very short. This first one is indeed simply a one-sentence story, and it's from China. And it says, a very poor plowman was plowing in a field when the leg of his bullock sank into a pit. He dug, and when he looked, a big pot of gold was there, piled in neatly. Piled in neatly. I'll read it again, because then you'll tell me what it means. A very poor plowman was plowing in a field when the leg of his bullock sank into a pit. He dug, and when he looked, a big pot of gold was there, piled in neatly. What's it mean, treasure finders?
He was lucky.
He was lucky.
He looked, paid attention.
Okay, so he was lucky. And he paid, it said there that he paid attention.
He was at the right place at the right time.
Right place at the right time.
What does piled in mean?
You tell me. I just read this stuff.
Someone put it in there.
He worked a little bit.
He worked? Did he? Well, I don't. Did he really? Well, maybe I should ask you, what do you mean by he worked?
He dug down when he dug.
Okay, that's right. He dug. But why was he digging?
To get his animal out.
Right. It was to free bullock, or I'll just say, right, he dug to free his ox.
So if it was neatly planted in, it was as if someone was waiting for someone else to find it.
Yeah, that, right. So because that notion about, right, piled neatly means that there was some kind of purpose or intention or what in there, so it's the kind of thing, is this person lucky, or again, to work with our little chart there, or was it more providence? Were the gods smiling on this plowman? What else? I think there's one more point in this story that, as told, right, we're to learn something from it.
He was a poor plumber.
He was poor, yeah. But what happened, right? He's plowing along and what happens?
Treacherous spring mistake.
No, don't get to the treasure too quickly.
His ox
goes down into the pit. That's good news, isn't it?
No, that's terrible.
No, that's terrible news. That's misfortune. Right? But his misfortune turns into what?
Fortune.
So that we see, indeed, he was at the right place at the right time, that he paid attention to what's going, right? His working in the ways he did, maybe someone, the intention, providence, or whatever. But I think, right, one of the big things in the story, and this is where we get to this whole paradox of things, is what we at first think is misfortune will really be fortune. Right? And I'm sure you know all those kind of jokes, right? Somebody said, you know, oh, my dog died. And you go, no, that's bad. And he goes, no, that's good because he had rabies and he would have, right, or whatever. Right? So you've always got that misfortune turns into fortune. And so there, the kind of sense is, right, those of us who think about where our treasures may be need to think that the misfortunes that come our way might be precisely what leads us to treasure, what leads us to good fortune. Here's one from India. Again, a short one, a two-sentence parable. The goddess Durga told a pilgrim in a dream, "Rise up, my son, go to thine own city of Benares. There is an enormous Nayagroda tree. By digging round its root, thou wilt at once obtain a treasure." I'll read that one again. The goddess Durga told a pilgrim in a dream, "Rise up, my son, go to thine own city of Benares. There is an enormous Nayagroda tree. By digging round its root, thou wilt at once obtain a treasure." So, let's look at this one first in terms of the characters, the actors. Who's all in this story?
The goddess.
The goddess.
We've got a goddess. You've got a pilgrim. What else?
Tree.
You've got a tree. Got a city.
Got a dream.
You've got a dream. You all have good memories. And one more thing.
The treasure.
The treasure, the gold.
Although it didn't say gold.
Oh, didn't it?
No,
you're right. It just said treasure. Okay, given those characters or items in the story, what might we learn about finding this time?
Well, it was providence. The goddess intervened. And,
okay, so she's linked up there somewhat with the notion of providence.
he was told to go back to his city.
Yeah, so there's a real
type of thing?
Yeah, there's so there's a there's a link here between a pilgrim who is of course journeying away from his city, right? Probably trying to go somewhere else, maybe on a religious pilgrimage, probably because of the goddess, trying to find, let's say, spiritual treasure or whatever. And the goddess tells him, go home. Right? Treasure, if you want to find treasure, I mean, we had that in the opening session too, to say, you know, again, there aren't any directors here. Good, right? I mean, if you want to find treasure, go home. Don't stay at Holden. You won't find anything here. Your treasures are at home. So all of you, please, go home.
Right? I made that quip the other night about there's no place like home. But really, this is the plot of The Wizard of Oz, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And again, you've got the dream, right? Sense of a vision, the gods, the dream that is there. Again, that is in terms of something that comes to you, right? Most of us don't seek dreams. We have dreams. Dreams come to us. And so again, this word about here's where the treasure is comes to us. What about this connection between trees and treasure? What about trees? Trees are almost the world over a generic symbol for what?
Life.
Life. Right, we have it starting out right there in the beginning of Genesis, right? The tree of life. Trees are always symbolic of life, perhaps because of their own majesty, grandeur, survival ability, as well as they provide home and protection for others, right? Birds can nest in them and so on and so forth. So here again, tree and treasure is linked up with life. Yes, please.
Also, in Genesis, there's the tree of knowledge.
Right.
Could the treasure have some knowledge?
It could have. This story is pretty short again, so it doesn't tell us a whole lot about that, but there's no reason that you can't say part of the treasure is knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's right. They have deep roots.
Treasure being buried under the tree, you might mean go back to your roots.
Right, and remember that's where he was told to dig, right? Dig around the roots. So again, there's that connection there between the city, the tree, right? Your treasure is going to be where your roots are. Right? Finding treasure is finding it in your roots.
Trees are fruitful.
Trees are fruitful, right? So again, you've got, they provide life, nourishment, fruitfulness, right? All of, again, the kind of things that you would like to connect positively, at least, with that sense of home. That's where your treasure will be. Okay? I'm going to move on now to a Jewish treasure tale. And this comes from a Jewish midrash, and midrash is the Hebrew word for parable. And I should just give you a reference. It is going to be a parable that tries to explain Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. So, you want to look at that in your Bibles, you can, but I'll read it for you. And it's going to explain Deuteronomy chapter 4, 7 and 8, using Proverbs 18, verse 16. And that's how the story starts out. So again, kind of rabbinic interpretation is you use one Bible verse that you think helps interpret another Bible verse, and to make the point of all of that, you'll tell a story. And so Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 7 to 8 reads, "For what other great nation has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is, whenever we call to him? And what other great nation has statutes and ordinances as just as this entire law that I am setting before you today?" And then from Proverbs 18, verse 16. And this is again the Jewish translation of this, the Hebrew reading of this verse. "A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men." And now starts the Jewish parable. What is the meaning of "a man's gift makes room for him"? Once Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Joshua went out on a mission to gather funds for a charitable cause. They came to the valley of Antiochia, where was a man, Abba Judan by name, who was in the habit of giving liberally to our rabbis. This Abba Judan was now poor, and catching sight of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Joshua, who had come to collect funds, he hid himself from them and went into his house and remained indoors for a day or two, and did not go out into the street. His wife asked him, "Why have you not gone out for the last 2 days?" He replied, "The rabbis have come to gather funds for those who labor in the Torah, and I am not in position to give them anything, and I am therefore ashamed to go out into the street." Now his wife, who loved pious deeds, said to him, "We still have one field left. Sell half of it and give it to them." He went and did so. He sold half of the field for 5 gold pieces and gave them to the rabbis, saying to them, "Pray for me." They prayed for him and blessed him. "May God fulfill your need." And they went to collect funds in another place. After some days, this same Abba Judan went to plow the half field he had retained. And as he was plowing, his cow fell and its leg was broken. When he went down to lift it up, the Holy One, blessed be he, gave light to his eyes, and he found a great treasure there. And he became even richer than he was ever before. On their return journey, the rabbis again passed through that place, and they said to a man, "We adjure, put us in touch with Abba Judan." The man replied, "It is easier to approach the king than him." The rabbis said to the man, "All that we wish is that he should not think that we pass through this place without sending greetings to him." Meanwhile, Abba Judan learnt of their arrival, and he called on the rabbis and gave them 1,000 gold pieces. He said to them, "Your prayer has borne fruit." They replied, "We too were aware of your good deeds, and we placed your name at the head of our list of contributors." The rabbis then applied to him the verse, "A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Now I know that's a little longer story, so to try to catch all of that. The first thing is, what is there in this story that was similar to the first story we read?
The creature fell in the ox.
Right. I mean, they're both out there plowing in the field. This time, this cow or ox falls, breaks its leg, and when that happens again, there he finds, and this time it makes it very specific, God enlightens the eyes of Abba Judan so that he can see the treasure that's there, and he's richer than he ever was before. So there's that sense again, what you think is misfortune turns into fortune. What else is there in this treasure story?
Gold.
Both gold. Yep, there's again gold. So, right? Specifically gold.
It's also that two people in these two stories, each was just going about their own business.
They were going about
their work.
Right.
Not seeking.
Yeah, that's good, right? I mean, and this is the... This seems to be one of the things that's there in so many of these treasure stories, right? If you really want to find treasure, you can't look for it. What else is going on in this story?
Well, the thing that struck me was the public recognition, because that part about we put you first on the list reminded me of all the charities that, you know, you get the list of all the donors. And
the rabbi said, you're first on our list.
You have been in the gold circle or something.
Gold circle of beavers.
Yeah.
The bonanza bunch here in Holden, or whatever the different, I can't even remember that.
He didn't say it, but it kind of sounded like he became a bit arrogant, because his neighbors said it would be easier to talk to the king than to talk to him.
Okay, but is that arrogance, or is that something, why is this guy so hard to talk to now? It's not that he's really arrogant.
Popular?
He's popular, but why is he popular? Yeah, and
everybody wants a
you get money. You got it, right? Right? It's the whole thing here now. Everyone comes to him. I'll just put it this way, right? Everyone comes to him for money. So when these rabbis say again, I should put his name up here so you can, right? So when the rabbis come and say, we'd like to visit Abba Judan, they say, oh, well, get in line, dear rabbis, because there's a lot of folks that want to see Abba Judan, even though he might be first on your list of contributors, right? He's got a lot, there's a waiting line there.
The wife was very generous.
The wife?
Meaning they were poor,
the wife is generous. And also the other way they called this is they said she was very pious. So that notion of generosity and piety are very closely interrelated.
But then he heard that the rabbis were in town, and so he made it a point to greet them.
Right? He wanted to go out and meet them too. And why?
To give him some more money.
He gives him some more money, mm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Did he do that for gratitude?
Thank you
for the prayers.
He did that probably for gratitude, but why else might you think?
Because the first time he gave, he got something back, and if he gives some more, he expects to get something more back.
Perhaps there's the sense there that, right, there's a connection there between blessing and giving.
Could there also be, because now he's giving, he wanted to meet the rabbis, he feels that he's just as high of an art, you know, as far as the fact that he's got all this money now, that he's just as high up the ladder.
Has the same rabbi. Kind of status that a yeah. rabbi has. Perhaps the story doesn't tell us a lot about that, because it says, you know, he has his status because everybody kind of now gives it to him because they're all coming to him for money.
I think you can just assume that he's a generous person, and this is tied into his belief system, because he always gave money in the past, and then when they came through, he was
right. So
ashamed.
So that he and his wife, that notion of generosity and piety, or as you say, his belief system and his actions, are very closely intertwined. The one other point, what is it that he doesn't do when he finds the treasure?
He doesn't give it to the poor.
Well, here again, giving it to the rabbis and all that could be considered like giving it to the poor. Or again, you get the sense that everyone's coming to him for money, and he's probably giving some.
He doesn't keep it for himself.
He doesn't keep it for himself. That again, this notion of misfortune turning into good fortune is something where now one's good fortune is to be shared with others. In other words, you don't hoard your treasure. You don't simply keep it for yourself. Or perhaps here, given that this is a parable told by the rabbis, Maybe this is their stewardship Sunday. Dearly beloved members of the synagogue, don't keep your money to yourself. Give it to your friendly rabbi for the study of Torah and the ongoing work of the synagogue. Right? But yeah, he doesn't keep it for himself. All right, we're going to move on, because this is going to help us slide into our parable that we want to look at, the parable that Jesus tells. And that's the parable of the rich man, the rich farmer, and it is Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. Luke chapter 12. Verses 13 to 21. And again, in terms of this story, some of the roots for it, there's an intertestamental book called Sirach, and again, I don't know if the Bibles that you have it. It would be in the Apocrypha, which are those books that are written between the closing of the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Sirach, it's again kind of wisdom stories and sayings. And Sirach says here, one becomes rich through diligence and self-denial. And the reward allotted to him is this: when he says, I have found rest, and now I shall feast on my goods, he does not know how long it will be until he leaves them to others and dies. There's a happy story, huh? And Gospel of Thomas is again, as you know, in the post-New Testament times, there's all sorts of stories and different texts going around that have stories of Jesus. Our Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, after long periods of controversy and whatnot, were determined to be indeed genuine, right? Canon standards of Gospels, and so therefore they make the Scriptures. Gospel of Thomas didn't make it, but it has within it many of the sayings or some of the stories that Jesus told. So here is the parable of the rich man, the rich farmer, very short version as it shows up in the Gospel of Thomas. There was a rich man who had much money. He said, "I shall put my money to use so that I may sow, reap, plant, and fill my storehouse with produce, with the result that I shall lack nothing." Such were his intentions. But that same night he died. Let the one who has ears hear. Okay? So you can see this parable is pretty close to Sirach. If we'd have lots of more time, we could look at that much more closely. But very quickly to say, these two, this saying, this little story, are saying about the same thing. Almost kind of, you can't take it with you, right? Now we've got that story. This time it will be of a rich farmer. And this is in Luke's Gospel. And I've added to it the beginning of it so we get a sense of the context that's there. And so, again, this is Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. And I'll follow along, please. I'll read it for you here as I've tried to translate it from the Greek and maybe contemporize a few terms. So we begin at verse 13. Then someone out of the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me judge or mediator over you?" And he said to them, "Beware and be on guard against all forms of greed, because life is not measured by the stuff we possess." Then he told them a parable, saying, "The lands of a certain rich man produced a bumper crop. And he deliberated with himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I do not have a place where I may gather my produce?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my granaries, and I will build larger ones, and I will gather there all the grain and my goods. And I will say to myself, Self, you have many good things laid up for many a year. Rest, eat, drink, and enjoy.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this very night they will demand yourself from you. But the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with the one who treasures up for oneself and is not rich in God." Okay. What things strike you about this parable?
It's so like what's happening today.
It's
everybody has to rent another place for all of their toys and stuff. My goodness, their garages aren't enough anymore.
Yeah, okay. I'll... I'll put it this way. Reflects a materialist ethics, right? The more stuff, the better. And I mean, right, going back then, we've got a lot of stuff accumulators nowadays too, yeah. What else? What is there in this parable that seems somewhat bizarre?
He's going to tear down his barns and build new ones, rather than most farmers would just save the old one and build another one besides.
That's right. Right, I mean.
Why tear down the old one?
The old granaries, or we can save my... Yeah, doesn't that strike you as kind of weird? I mean, you know, is that what a smart farmer does? So why is this guy doing this?
He's not so smart.
He's not so smart. That's for sure. But what kind of attitude is there? You know.
Bigger is better.
Bigger is better. Yeah. What else? What kind of attitude is there?
Things are disposable.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just didn't hear.
Things are disposable.
Yeah, he's got this kind of disposable mentality.
Throwaway culture.
Yeah. What else?
That material things are better than faith.
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother option here, right?
It's material. Like it's his God.
Oh, so you want to take it so far as if it's his God? We're talking here about idolatry, huh? Well, this is pretty serious stuff now, isn't it?
Because he doesn't say that this bumper crop was due to God.
Nope.
He just,
the way Jesus tells the story is, it just happens, right? His lands produced a bumper crop. It isn't that he did anything differently or worked harder or whatnot. It just came his way.
But what's this got to do with the guy in the crowd worrying about his inheritance?
Well, what do you think?
I think they left out some sentences. Well, I mean, the connecting sentence is, be on your guard against all kinds of greed.
Right.
But it really sounds like he's talking about a different kind of greed.
Well, is this rich farmer greedy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So then, could that be the connection? Those of you who are... You know, the two brothers there, you know, the family fighting over the inheritance. Right? Why would you do that? Well, Jesus seems to indicate there, it seems more than anything, it's kind of greed, right? It's a materialist ethic. You want stuff. And you want to make sure that my brother doesn't have more stuff than I've got. And Jesus is almost saying, why should I even care about your stuff? Right?
Was there in that time, didn't the oldest son receive a larger portion of the estate or whatever it was than the other children?
Yes, that was often the case, but certainly the other sons would get their quote-unquote fair share. Mm-hmm. And that could be distributed in various ways. The oldest son would give them a piece of that land, or would, as we would say nowadays, kind of buy him out and say, okay, you would get these 3 acres, so I'll pay you the, you know, 37 shekels for those 3 acres, you know, whatever.
You know, we can't see the person in the crowd.
No.
And if the person in the crowd is dressed in fine clothing, he may be saying, you know, you've got enough, don't worry about it, what your brother gives, you've got enough, that's plenty. Maybe this is a sister calling out in the crowd, and we know she's not going to get a shekel. I mean, you know, you could play with it.
You could play with that, and that might be the case, but I don't know if that would make any difference in terms of the way
helps.
The parable is done here. A couple things, right, right, from looking at this and other things that are interesting and unique in this parable. This is the only parable which Jesus tells where God speaks. All the other parables, you know, other people talk or whatnot, or you might imply that God is around somewhere. But this is the only parable that we have in the four Gospels where God is actually on the scene. God has a speaking role. And that's, you know, there again you can think, well, wow, I mean, you know, when God speaks, people should listen, right? So God is speaking here. And, of course, the other interesting thing is, what does God say? Fool, which is not a particularly nice thing to say. Right? And he says, what is the translation here? You fool, this very night, your life is being demanded of you. Now again, I don't think that's the best translation around because, and as I tried to show in my translation, that verb, your very life is being demanded of you, you kind of get the sense there that it's, you know, God who's going to take this person's life. But that's not what the verb is. Third person plural. And so it would be, again, as I try to translate it, this very night they will demand yourself. Right? So it's this. They will demand. Now, who's they? We all know who they are. They are always those people, right? It's them. Who are they? Who's the they? Be free with your imagination. What do you think? Because obviously, we're not told that, but here again, that might be that link up to the dispute that's going on between the family about inheritance. Right. Who is the they will demand?
It wouldn't be his stuff, would it?
No, it wouldn't be his stuff. But the thing here again, they will demand your life, again, your soul, or again, the word for soul is the notion of self. They'll demand yourself. Well, who is it who could demand yourself? What could happen to this person that night?
Would it be the angel of death?
The angel of death could come. What else?
Is that plural? Is the angel of death plural?
No, I guess not.
No, but there might be more than one angel of death. The angels of death will come, right? But the verb there is definitely plural. They.
Yeah.
bad guys.
The bad guys. I mean, you know, here he is. He's got all this money, you know. He's built the barns and all of that. And, you know, the bandits and renegades out there are going to say, well, you know, we're going to get this rich guy because he's got bucks. So, I mean, the they could be robbers are going to come in.
Tax people.
The tax people. No, it could be. And certainly we know in terms of the way the tax system worked back then, right? I mean, all the Romans cared about is you get our fair share, and if you want to take more and the people are uncooperative, you just tell us and, you know, we'll haul them away. You know, we'll kill them if we have to. We don't care. We just want the money. So, yeah, the tax man could get it and demand your very self. That literally kill you. But I think there again, it's this sense of the they, whoever, right? It's that ambiguous they. But we've got that sense at times too, right? I mean, we know how they have got it in for us, don't we? Whatever that they and those forces of death might be. And of course, it makes no matter how many barns we have, how much money we have, they'll always win. So I mean, I think it's that kind of sense that's going on here. And finally, one of the things to note is, why does God call this man a fool? Two reasons. First of all, within the Jewish faith, within the scriptures themselves, there is always an understanding that in God's economy, a bumper crop is always for the sake of the poor. Think about that, and the kind of paradigmatic story for that is the Joseph story. Right? Joseph, sold into slavery, goes down to Egypt, all of that kind of stuff. Finally, interprets Pharaoh's dream, and Pharaoh puts Joseph second in command, because what's going to happen? Right? There are 7 years of bumper crops, and then there are 7 years of famine. And Joseph is the one who what? Says, not tear down the granaries, but build more granaries. We need to save that grain, not to make Pharaoh rich, not to make me the richest guy in all of Egypt, but we're going to need him for the lean years to feed all the people. Right? Abundance, bumper crops for the sake of the poor. You'll find that all throughout the Old Testament. This guy is no Joseph. Right? He gets a bumper crop, and what does he say? He says, rest, eat, drink, enjoy. And it's all for himself. Everyone else is excluded. In fact, and again, here's one of the great things about the story. Everyone else is excluded, such that even the narrator of the story is excluded. Right? If you will, Jesus starts telling the parable, there was a man, and so on and so forth, and that. And then this rich man starts talking to himself, and then in verse 19, he says, and I will say to my soul, In other words, the narrator no longer tells us what this man is saying and doing. This man is saying, I don't even need a narrator to tell the story. I'm going to tell the story myself. And I'm going to tell the story myself to myself. So there. Yeah. Right? Everyone is excluded. Even the teller of the story. I just think that's great.
Yeah.
I might be well wacky, but who knows, right? But that whole sense of, I mean, you can't get any more exclusive than that, can you? In terms of everybody is out, it's only me, and everything, all this stuff is totally and completely for me. And it's at that point where God says to him, fool. Because again, from the scriptures, we see from Proverbs, from Sirach here and others, there are two things that make you a fool. First of all, you are a fool when you do not share your abundance with the poor. Right? And that's again where that Abba Judan story comes in, right? He's generous, he's pious, we could say he is a wise man because he shares his bounty with the rabbis and with the other people, right? He recognized it, the treasure was not for himself, it's for others. And then the deeper level of what makes you a fool is that you are an atheist, if you will. Because to not share your abundance with the poor, to keep it for yourself, takes us precisely to this point. Right? Mammon, materialism, stuff has become your god. That versus faith, and therefore, again, this person is a fool because he's an idolater. His actions of storing and keeping everything for himself, right, treasuring, hoarding his treasure, basically says, I don't need God. I've got my stuff. Right? Atheism, if you will, that way. And that's, again, God speaks and renders the verdict. To not share your abundance with the poor or those in need, to see your total security resting in material stuff rather than in the providential care of God. Because remember, the bumper crop just happened, and we could say it's providence or a lot more than that. But to do that makes you an unbeliever. And so therefore, he is a fool. So the story is a lot more than, let's say, Sirach simply, you can't take it with you. This is a story that says, right, as one commentator says, this rich farmer is a fool because he mismanages a miracle. The miracles that happen in our lives, the miraculous bumper crop, the miraculous recovery from disease, the miraculous whatever treasured thing, the miraculous birth of a child, whatever treasured things come into your life. Are you going to be a fool and mismanage it? Or are you going to recognize that as treasure, it is meant for serving the needs of others and giving thanks to God. And the way indeed you give thanks to God is through meeting the needs of others. So that again, the sense here about treasure is, right, first of all, if you want to find it, seeking isn't going to do it. It seems not seeking is finding. And secondly, once you find it, what do you do with it? Give it away as quickly as you can. Right? We can link it up to one more little phrase. I mean, Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, where he says, God loves a cheerful giver. And that word for cheerful in Greek is hilarion, from which we get the word hilarious. I mean, so it's over-the-top cheerfulness, isn't it? God loves a hilarious giver. Right? Take my money, please! Right? Instead of the old Henny Youngman, take my wife, please, right? This is, take my money, please! That's what it's all, I mean, that's, if you will, what would have made this rich man wise instead of a fool. And so therefore, again, that last little verse, or you know, kind of Jesus drawing the, so it is with the one who, what do they say here? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves. The Greek there is just the verb treasures. So I tried to, so it is with the one who treasures up for oneself, right? In other words, treasuring here is like hoarding it all and is not rich, you can say, toward God. Go ahead, Eric.
All right, sorry.
We give it away.
All right.
Yeah.
We give it away.
Hilariously.
We're going to laugh you right out of the
room.
All right,
I'll take it.
So the preposition there is literally in. So it's not just being rich toward God, but again, you think about that if you have that treasure, if you have this sense of generosity and faith, then you are rich in God. Not just toward God, but you are rich in God, right? Because that treasure, which is God's very self, is yours, with you, in you. And so you don't have to treasure up other things because you're rich in God. And if you're rich in God, right, what's stuff? Right? That's again the opposition here that's in the parable, rich in God versus rich in stuff.
In the Jewish Midrash, there was something about when his ox fell in the hole, mm-hmm. something about light.
Yes, God, that's where God comes into the picture there and enlightens him, enables him to see. Yeah, as he was plowing, his cow fell and its leg was broken. When he went down to lift it up, the Holy One, blessed be he, that's God, gave light to his eyes, and he found a great treasure there, and he became even richer than he was ever before. Right. So again, right, it's God who gives. I mean, that little phrase there would parallel here the, you got a bumper crop, right? But again, it's not seeking. It's providence, God's goodness, God's graciousness, which provides. What do you do with it? What do you do once you have found that treasure? Right. And so there's, in that sense, there is wise finding and foolish finding. This is a parable about a foolish finder. Any other comments you'd like to make in our time?
Can you read that once more where it says about the gift that you give makes room?
Yes, this is the verse from, this is Proverbs chapter 18, verse 16. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Those proverbs are always getting you, aren't they? Right. And so so the whole story here again about it. How is it that the gift makes room? Well, right. This treasure that Abba Judan found, right, in that sense, opened up all sorts of opportunities for him to be faithful and pious and generous toward his neighbors. I think that's what they mean by that's how it makes room for you, right? Opens up the opportunities to be abundant. And in there lies your greatness. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, if you're around, we're going to obtain treasure. We're finally going to get some treasure. Maybe.